And so we have to say goodbye to big band, Broadway, and beyond. Thank you, Joe, for another great 3 hours on every Friday on WHFR.FM, the station making waves from Henry Ford Community College. And coming up now, our public affairs show, local news and alternative views. And we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Today is February the 18th, 2011. How are you doing out there? Hope everyone's having a great day. It's almost like springtime in Michigan, at least by comparison with the last couple of weeks. So hope you can enjoy yourself before the cold comes back and hits you. We have to get into our show quickly today because we have two special guests. Yes, two, not one, on some very, very interesting topics. Let me introduce my co-host who will introduce our first guest. Dennis, our news director, welcome today. Good to see you always.
Thank you, Jay. I don't think it's going to get cold again. I think we're headed to a lot warmer weather in the next, I don't know, 6 months.
I think they call it springtime, and then it becomes summer, so that's the hope, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. The groundhog saw his shadow, so that's good news.
Okay, who's your guest?
I have with me, well, you're here too. We have Ruth Ann Schmidt is a, I think you said you've been 7 years.
This is my seventh year.
Seventh year full-time in the English department. You teach in addition to the required classes, the English 132, 131 and 132, you also teach a creative writing class.
I, along with Jim Wineless, teach creative writing.
Cool.
And the last couple of years, I've had it during the fall and winter terms. And Jim has had it during the spring and summer. And hopefully some new people will jump in.
Well, as you know, based on the newspaper, I work with the Mirror News, and we have a very creative section now. And I get a lot of people that were taking you with had you for creative writing that are coming aboard. So you're doing a great job. I can say that.
I'm very proud. I mean, I'm very proud of everyone over at the newspaper, and I'm very proud of Michigan Avenue and the quality of work. And what surprises me every year is there are students here doing their own work, you know, cultivating their own talents, who will contribute to Barrett, the creative writing contest coming up, and will submit to Michigan Avenue even beyond the class. So I just find myself in a really privileged place of encouraging those talents at the newspaper, those students who are now at the newspaper, and hopefully finding and giving voice to those students here at HFCC.
Well, they think the world of you, too. So, but you touched on two things that we I really wanted to focus on, one being the Francis G. Bear Creative Writing Contest. Now, I know a little bit about it because I was fortunate to be able to take
second
part in
place.
It. Well, yeah, that was good. And all, you know,
2008?
No, I think it was 2009.
2009,
yeah,
sorry.
I haven't been here that long. But tell us about this contest because we have a deadline quickly approaching, and
yes,
a number of students listen to this show, so
yes,
we'd like to know more.
Yes. If you're an enrolled student and you have aspirations in poetry, fiction, nonfiction, and drama, anything creative with the language, please submit your work to Mish Ave with a cover letter for the Creative Writing Contest, and the deadline is March 1st, 2011, so about 2 weeks.
And that's for current students? Students
current
that are
students, enrolled. Yeah.
At Henry Ford, yeah.
At Henry Ford, yes,
that's
at Henry Ford.
That's right.
Michigan Avenue will take alumni. We still take enrolled students and primarily enrolled students, but we'll take staff and alumni.
And you're working on, is this issue number two of the Michigan Avenue Journal?
This is issue number two.
This is a literary magazine. You founded this.
Yes.
I know, and you usually won't toot your own horn, but I'm asking you, please tell us about this.
Michigan Avenue was started last year. It is not the first literary magazine we had here at HFCC. Jim Wineless founded or built Goodwheels, as far as I know. And Goodwheels came out maybe once every 5 years and was focused on the creative writing class. And he's a very talented poetry instructor, so it was poetry intensive. Michigan Avenue is a little bit more open. It involves artwork and we're hoping to continue to involve the art division and the journal's development. And we take open submissions from everyone at the college, and we'll take alumni submissions, and we have a few staff submissions.
So you don't necessarily have to be a part of the Barrett contest to be involved in the journal.
No, although if you're part of the Barrett, you have a place in Michigan Avenue.
Right, I noticed that. And it's just very diverse. I mean, high quality stuff, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys really do. You do an excellent job with that. And then some of the other things that are going in that you said are illustrations, maybe photographs.
Yes, and painted works, things that students send to me electronically. Everything must be sent electronically, even the artwork by PDF to mishav@hfcc.edu.
And then there's a special, I noticed, website, or it was page on our HFCC website, which is hfcc.edu/English/Michigan Ave.
Yes. It's a beautiful website designed by Mariana, I want to say Morena.
Yeah,
Morena.
That's right. Yeah. She's our layout editor.
Yes. And she is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Amazingly talented.
I want to tell people that, you know, the Barrett contest is equal, the winning, if you win, you get money.
Oh, yes. That's really important. That's really important. I always forget about the money component.
I didn't.
You can win up to $500, not individually, I should say. The prize money is $500 in total. So usually the first place winner can take up to $100 or $200. And then everybody walks away with something. And usually we have maybe five first place winners and two honorable mentions.
Now we have there's a really good question written right out here in the notes, and it's, you take Microsoft Word attachments
for writing pieces and usually a PDF for art.
How do you want the attachment saved? A docx, which would be the newest version of Word?
I think a doc is best.
Okay, so
I have 2007.
That's an excellent way. So what you would do is you would go back and save as and make sure it's for an older compatible version.
Okay. Yes.
And again, the web the submissions go to mishave @hfcc.edu.
Yes,
all
exactly.
Right. Cool.
Exactly.
Do you have anything that, I mean, is there anything special about Michigan Avenue Journal we should know? Because I know that at one point you talked about it going out to the community. The first issue was, I got my copy. Mm-hmm. At some point, is that the plan?
You know, I would love that. And I think that the school is interested in the magazine going out to special public leaders, going out into the public and representing the school. We did a little bit. We did a little bit of representing the school in that last semester. We took second place in the Association for Community Colleges Midwestern Division for Literary Journals. We came in second place to Washtenaw Community Colleges Journal, which is quite excellent, and they have many years on us. And so, you know, people wrote from the community. We had one representative write and congratulate us. So we are working our way towards representing HFCC in the community.
Was there any kind of national I remember seeing something.
That was our national award for the Midwest Division.
For the Midwest, okay,
yeah,
gotcha. All right. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Maybe we'll make it national, like, next year or the next couple years.
Yeah, it's a goal.
Yes,
right?
Yes. I'm fighting. Fighting for first place.
I was thinking that, you know, maybe we could distribute in local bookstores, but then it just dawned on me, we're losing many of our local bookstores. I mean, we don't have Little Professor after a couple of years on Michigan Avenue. Borders is in Chapter 11, although may stay open.
Right.
Some of these local bookstores did have a section of their periodicals that was devoted to creative writing journals.
Yeah,
I mean, Wayne State had some publications, and these are usually pricey because they don't usually have ads in them, and of course, publishing does cost money. You're killing trees and all that, but nonetheless, for a good spiritual and sometimes ethical cause. So it's important, I think, at least to have it available somehow on campus, like at our college bookstore.
We worked on distribution last year. We tried to save the journal for those students who are in it, first of all, and we didn't know what the distribution would be. We've given most of our journals away. So we started at the library, and we'll probably start at the library again, holding certain copies for those who are in the magazine, and then maybe we'll have them available at the bookstore and try to make it a little bit widely known where you could get a copy of the magazine. The beauty of having it a little bit smaller and closer to home is that the magazine is free.
Yeah.
And if we put it in
good
local
price.
Bookstores, we might. Yeah, it's a good price. You know, you really can't get cheated with that price. So if we put it in local bookstores, we might have to negotiate something, or maybe not. But we're growing.
Well, we're going to have to wrap up the segment. We really thank you for coming, and we will continue mentioning the deadline, March 1st, which is that a Tuesday?
yes, pretty close.
If it's Tuesday, you better get that submission in. And they're doing it online, MishAv.
At hfcc.edu.
Yes. And you have to follow the guidelines. But if you go to the website, all the rules are there.
All the rules are there. We have some. We want you to write a paragraph about yourself. So we have a piece for the contributors section.
Website is right here at hfcc.edu/Michigan Ave/English. Michigan Ave, right.
Yes.
Okay, you got to put that English in the Michigan Ave.
If you just get to the /English department website, there'll probably be a link there that you can click on, right?
I cheat. I go to the home page.
Yeah, it's right on there. That's right.
I go to the home page, and I go to student, I think it's called Student Life, that button that says Student Life at the top, and I scroll down, and it says Webzine. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kim was very nice to put us there. He used to have his own little school class Webzine there, but he put us there instead, and I'm really grateful. You just scroll down, and it says Webzine. Click on it, and it'll take you right to the website if you're a cheater like me.
Okay.
Well, we wish you and the English department continued success with this. Creative expression, it's got to be supported. And, of course, writing is getting to be, and reading are getting to be somewhat endangered skills in our society with all the tweeting going on. What can you do in 140 words?
Right.
Letters, right?
Characters. Absolutely, including spaces.
Oh, that's just, it's too little for me.
Hey, that's lean writing. That's very lean and concise.
Any college professor, that's impossible to do anything in
a good exercise
characters.
For the students, though.
Well, yes. Maybe. Intense poetry, but that's not what usually happens. So just give a little plug. You're teaching right now a day section, and is it a Mr. or Ms. Krupa that's doing an evening section?
She's doing an evening section on Tuesday and Thursday, Tanya Krupa. She has an MFA from University of Massachusetts in poetry. Hmm. I have an MFA in fiction. My love is short story. So if you're thinking about taking creative writing, I'm more of the fiction edge. I do all the best I can, but I'm more the fiction short story. I love short story. Well, and Tanya, I was looking for an adjunct, or I was looking for someone who would be able to fill in the more poetry side of things. So.
And I think you mentioned that the class will be offered in the shortened spring
version.
Semester, May and June this year by the English department, and be back again in the fall, of course, too, probably a couple sections, let's hope. So highly recommend the English department. You have other great lit classes. We don't have time to go into that right now. But Ruth Ann Schmidt is the key contact person. That's S-C-H-M-I-T-T.
One at hfcc.edu.
So it's R. Schmidt 1.
Yes, you have to put the 1.
Yeah, okay, because you're the first, right?
Yes.
That's, they're getting so picky these days with those addresses. But good luck with the contest, and we'd love to try to find some way to. When's the date of the awards? Have you picked it yet?
You know, it always happens the third week in April, and this year I think it falls on a.
Usually a Thursday, right?
A Thursday. I'm trying to think. It's the 21st, actually. It's April 21st, 2011.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And we might have some examples of past winners on the website under the Barrett button, under the Barrett contest button.
Great.
Pretty soon.
Well, we'll look forward to that, and we'll try to get some people on. We actually have a person on the staff that's trying to. We go back and forth with the interest and the quality of our volunteer staff here, but we have. I just talked to someone yesterday that's interested in getting a spoken word or a poetry. Local poets type of show going again.
Great.
So we'll see how that goes. And I gave them your name, so watch
out.
Oh,
great. I love the radio. I love the radio.
Lots of spirit. Well, we love the English department, too, and they gave me many good years of full-time pay. So
Yes,
thank you. So we've got to move on the journal right now, but thank you, Ruth Ann Schmidt,
for coming by.
And if you are a currently enrolled student here at HSCC, remember the Francis Barrett Writing Awards contest deadline is
March 1st,
Tuesday, March 1st. So get those entries submitted online. We're going to start our break here with commentary from Jim Hightower. We'll be right back.
You'll fall for anything. More than an old adage, that's a crucial operating principle of presidential leadership. Indeed, it's a mark of political character, defining whether a president will stand up for the many or be pushed around by the arrogant few. In the past, when overprivileged corporate barons selfishly feathered their already luxurious nests at the expense of America's national interests, some U.S. presidents had the moxie to get in their royal faces. Using what Theodore Roosevelt called the bully pulpit of the presidency, those White House champions of the common good confronted the greed of the corporate elite, rallying the larger public to bring them down to earth. Barack Obama does not seem to have such presidential fortitude. Corporate America has been given a wealth of tax breaks, regulatory favors, and absurd levels of subsidies in recent years, amassing a stash of cash that now tops $2 trillion. But they adamantly refuse to invest that in American jobs and communities. Yet, in a recent meeting with these arrogant powers, Obama showed neither anger nor strength. Rather, he essentially begged them to consider, quote, what you can do for America. Pretty please? With sugar on it? I want to encourage you to get in the game of job creation, he pleaded. Encourage? Why not demand? And what did he buy with this genteel appeal to corporate patriotism? He got the corporate thumb jabbed in his eye. Bottom line, barked the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's chief lobbyist after Obama's plea, the most patriotic thing a company can do is ensure it is in business. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a perfect expression of today's prevailing corporate ethic. It's a perverse twist on John Kennedy's appeal. Ask not what you can do for your country, ask what you can do for yourself. Why should any president want any part of that?
Get ready. WHFR 89.3 is bringing you a winter jazz benefit. Saturday evening, February 26th, from 7 to 11 p.m. at Andiamo in Dearborn, located at 21400 Michigan Avenue. Featuring the After Five Jazz Ensemble, the Marvin Jones Trio, and Coffee with the Blue Dawn Band. Donations only $5 at the door and proceeds will benefit the station making waves, 89.3 WHFR. A cash bar and all-you-can-eat pasta and salad buffet will also be available. For further information, call us 313-845-9676.
This is the new WHFR Journal from Henry Ford Community College. All the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, but certainly... Today, it's myself and Dennis. I'm Jay Koronick, station advisor, WHFR also, and we're expecting a very, very special guest in about 10 minutes for the last half of the show. Couldn't be more relevant. I usually don't like to mention the names because I want to keep you on your seat and excited, but this is oh so big deal for Dearborn and the local area to get some answers, at least at the outset, to discuss the issue of funding for our Dearborn Public Schools. And so we have a guest in just about 10 minutes or so from now. I wanted to look at the local papers briefly, except first off, I wanted to say that I did attend, as a reporter, the Sustainability Roundtable, the Sierra Club Cool Cities Sustainability Roundtable, which has been happening every month for the last several months. This last meeting was here at the Henry Ford Community College SME Center. It's the north part of our main campus, Evergreen Road and Ford Road. And it was a presentation by several people, but Lourdes Lohr, who did a presentation that Dennis happened to catch back in January about food and climate change, she continued, this time talking about contaminants in the food. And, our special guest is there, and Dennis is going to run out and allow him to come in. And so I highly recommend to you, if you can find it, and it's a relatively inexpensive paperback, look this up, folks. Michael Pollan is the author of a couple of books on food and good eating and healthy eating today. His last book was called The Omnivore's Dilemma. He's got a very short book, 64 suggestions that you should keep in mind when you're choosing food and eating food. It's called Food Rules. Food Rules. Yeah. What will we do without it? An eater's manual. Okay, so it's a guide to eating healthy food all the time. And he doesn't push veganism or vegetarianism on you, but some great suggestions. And Lourdes Lohr was quoting from Mr. Poland's several of his books and others. Just to let you know, the next Sustainability Roundtable is on a Wednesday night in March. It's 3:23, so the 23rd of March, Wednesday night, again at the SME Henry Ford Community College Center Community Meeting Room. Okay, and its usual times are 6 to 8 p.m. So,
Hassan?
I also wanted to mention that I got an email today from George Duraney, and this sort of leads into our next guest in a couple of minutes here. I just got another couple of headline topics I want to mention, but we'll mention George as we're introing our guest. Here at Henry Ford Community College, the 4th Annual Alternative Energy Summit will be next week, Friday. So 1 week from today, the journal will still be on from 1 to 2 o'clock, but technology permitting, we're going to have the audio broadcast, premiere it here, of Mayor O'Reilly's State of the City presentation, which will actually be done live at Henry Ford Centennial Library on Wednesday night, the 23rd, starting at 7 p.m. That's a much smaller facility than the center, the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center in Dearborn, where they had it last year. I think it only seats about 100 or 120 people, and they're gonna close the doors, lock them up tight at 7 o'clock so that no one else can get in. But if you do want to get there, but you might want to get there about 6:30 to see it live. It will be broadcast live, and as it wasn't last year, on both WOW and Comcast Government Access Channel, whichever number that is on your modem. Anyway, it's either 10 or 12, something like that, on WOW and so on. So you can see it live there, and they'll be repeating that, of course, that cable broadcast into the future. I think that the mayor is going to be revising some of what he's going to be saying until the last minute, considering the new crisis to several of our local institutions, the cities and the schools, if proposals that Governor Snyder just made yesterday to the Senate in Lansing about budget cuts that he proposes. And so we're interested to hear that. But myself and Dennis, we're going to be going over to the Alternative Energy Summit here on our campus. It's at our Conference Center, also known as the Administrative Services and Conference Center, the Mazzara Building, on our main campus here. It's from 8:30 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon, and it's free to the public. Okay, I think they even have morning snacks or something. So. Dennis is excited about that.
Yeah, Got my attention.
Yeah. So, but there are several different kinds of sessions, all about energy and new energy businesses and career opportunities and ways to save energy and
driving a hybrid.
Yeah, yeah. Right. President Mee is probably going to donate her hybrid for test drives again.
And okay.
They haven't asked me about my clean diesel, but
well, I'm sure they will.
Yeah,
just wait.
I'm going along with them if that's the case. I guard my car. Anyway, that's going to be a great event here, and that's going to be a big deal, but free parking, and that's a week from Friday. But we're going to be broadcasting, again, the Mayor's State of the City address, recorded, on next Friday from 1 to 2, and you'll hear it here and then can access it again on our archives at whfr.fm. Okay, it's time. Our special guest today in the last half of the show is Jim Schoolmaster, and he recently has the now maybe dubious honor of being elected president of the K-12 school board here at Public Schools in Dearborn, and of course he wears that second hat really well, which is also being the president of the Henry Ford Community College Board of Trustees. Same people. They get elected once, but they're stuck with two jobs, two very important jobs. Today, Mr. Schoolmaster, welcome. We're just going to talk about K-12 issues. I thought it was going to be more positive until the announcements yesterday.
Thank you, Jay. I feel like Captain the Titanic today, but actually you have some positive news in that Governor Snyder indicated that he would probably fund HFCC to the extent that he was funded, that you were funded last year.
Right. Community colleges have been, you might say, saved from any cuts. They're not getting any increases. But and, of course, we're really a great educational value and so necessary for people that need, let's say, short-term programs, too, certificates to get back to work quickly. You know, the four-year schools don't have the certificate and the two-year degree programs that can really get people going quickly into a new direction. And so I understand that. I do think, as you probably do too, the most important, pardon the expression, business in Michigan is education.
Certainly.
All the way from the lower levels to the highest levels, and that's the core of our future. So I'm in slight disagreement with any cuts whatsoever. My colleagues in four-year institutions are facing a 15% cut or more if they try to raise their tuition more than 7% to cover the losses. So they're really in a desperate situation. And, okay, as you understand, as I understand it, what's the situation for public schools? Is it about 400? I saw numbers from $300 to $470 cuts of funding per student.
That is correct for Dearborn. But there are additional fundings that Dearborn receives that are going to be cut in addition to the fundings that you've seen. And that's just the per pupil allowance. Dearborn is given 20J money, and that could be a cut as much as $280 per pupil. In addition to that, the pension plan, as you know, is underfunded, and so there's talk about raising our contribution from about 20% to about 25%, which is obviously a 25% increase as to our pension plan obligations.
Explain that, the pension plan. Obviously, I'm retired from Henry Ford Community College, but I'm still back here a little bit part-time. I assume that all the schools, including the college, that public institutions, that they paid into a state fund? Is that where the pension is?
That
you
is
you
exactly,
don't have your own bank account.
That's exactly correct, Jay. Right. They pay into a state fund, and for the sake of argument, we'll assume somebody earns $100,000.
Please. Yeah.
Okay. And actually, believe it or not, the average teacher in Dearborn earns total compensation very close to or approaching $100,000.
Okay, well, let's be correct. Total compensation includes all the health benefits you're talking about.
It
the whole
includes,
package, right?
It includes health benefits and retirement benefits and all the, you know, everything. But for the sake of argument right now, an individual is earning $100,000 cash take-home pay or gross pay. Right now, we are obligated to pay about 46% on top of that for things like pension costs, for things like medical costs, for FICA, for dental, and those types of things. Right now, the state wants 25% for retirement costs, which would result in us paying from about 50% as opposed to 46%. It will increase our costs $4,000 or 4%.
You know, I don't know how they invest the money at the state, but it sounds like they had some bad investments and some failed mortgages or something.
Well,
because
Jay,
these costs are huge.
Certainly.
And you're not going to retire for 30 or 40 years. And, of course, they do have to pay the salaries or the pensions for the people already retired out of that same pot, I guess.
Our pension plan assumed about a 7% return. Unfortunately, the returns have been about 3%.
Sure.
In fact, some of the returns have not been there at all. Mm. You know, some people have lost money on pension plans, and so therefore our pension plan is extremely underfunded. To make sure that it's funded, you know, once again, the state of Michigan is requiring the school district to pay 25% of every dollar that we pay in salaries to the pension plan. And at the present time, one would argue that, believe it or not, the medical aspect of the pension plan is $15 billion, with a B, dollars underfunded.
Wow. I know that Mayor O'Reilly, in a sort of a budget address preliminary to his State of the City that he gave 2 weeks ago, talked about the city employee pension funds and the health insurance cost. That's what's killing the city right now, the city budget. This is before we knew about the lack in funding or the revenue sharing money is being cut radically from the state, apparently, or at least that's the proposal. So these are certainly difficult times. You have the answer today with you?
It's similar in many ways to Social Security. For many years, you had a lot more people in the system working and paying for the retirees. Now all of a sudden the baby boomers are starting to retire, and you have fewer workers and more retirees. And that coupled with the fact that returns are not great on investments, you know, we've gone from 7.5% on average to 3% or 2%. All of a sudden, we're in trouble.
Dennis?
My question, and you brought it up a minute ago, is in regard to the 20J money, because I know that caused a lot of confusion last year when it seemed like it was abruptly taken away.
That's correct.
Money that we had actually... for lack of a better term, we budgeted thinking we were going to get this money, and all of a sudden it's no longer there. And I think it was between $4 and $5 million. Is that accurate? Okay. Mm-hmm. Is this something that the taxpayers will continue to support and then to not get any money back? How does that work?
Absolutely. We will continue to support it. We were something called a harmless school district when Proposition A went into effect, which means that we were paying more than the $4,500 that each school district got in 1993 when Proposition A went into effect. And so we were considered to be a hold harmless school district. That means that the state of Michigan said that they would continue to fund us at those types of levels because of the fact that we were, as a city, funding our students at much higher levels.
Us, Livonia, Birmingham, West Bloomfield. There's similarities between these communities, obviously.
That's correct.
Okay. And so then they took it away almost without warning, or was it completely without warning?
Without warning.
And then we had talked about in this show how I think everybody would have appreciated not only warning, but maybe a graduated process if this
Amen.
Was
going.
And so this year we're locked into paying this extra money, and based on the state of the state, we're not going to. I mean, we'd be silly to think we're getting any back, correct?
That's correct.
Wow.
You know, what's really sad is Dearborn is something called a donor district. We're paying a lot more than many other communities are into the school aid fund. We're donating. Mm-hmm. We're getting back as little as maybe 40 or 50% of our money.
Whoa.
And our monies are going to, you know, other school districts, the smaller school districts, the rural school districts throughout the state, those districts that could not pass millages in 1993.
Right.
That's why in some ways this was called a Robin Hood bill. That was Proposition A, because it would take from the rich, which was Dearborn and Birmingham and schools that were funding their schools much larger, and give it to the poorer school districts.
Sure.
Okay, the magic percentage is about 7% decline in that funding then? I think that's what I've read in the Free Press, 7%, something like that.
And that's the school aid fund.
Yeah, that's the 300, and again, I've seen $300 to $470 per student reduction, but that equates to about 7% apparently.
You know, right now Bob Cipriano is going through the figures. There's 142 pages in the School Aid Act right now, and there's a lot of things that we aren't even sure of. For example, there's an elimination of Section 41, which is called bilingual education, and Dearborn receives $435,000 as to that, and it looks like that's also going to be eliminated. Hmm. And so in this situation where many school districts are catching cold, Dearborn's catching pneumonia because of the fact that they are just taking so much more from us.
Right. And we're a prime candidate for the particular grant or the extra money like that, being in Dearborn with the cultures the way they are.
Our special guest here in the second half hour of the Journal today is Jim Schoolmaster, who is the new president of the Board of Ed here in Dearborn, Dearborn Public Schools Board of Ed. And we're talking about the mayor's proposals primarily. Let me ask about what I thought was a done deal, and that is negotiations with the teachers' union. It had gone on for a while, and the teachers thought maybe they had an agreement, and then the school board, was it about 6 months ago, decided to get a fact finder to come in and look at both sides. The fact finder released a report saying, I'm just touching on a couple points, that the teachers could take, should take a 2.4% decrease in salaries and also pay more money for their own health insurance. Teacher unions said, well, okay, we think we can go with this. And I think there was somewhat favorable response, and this was only about a month ago, I think, I read about it, from certain people on the board. I'm not sure if you, Jim, were quoted as being in favor of it, of what the fact finder seemed to recommend, but there was favorable comments from the board side. It's sad to say, but that hadn't been signed into law, and I assume that it's in limbo at best right now, that particular agreement, because what I've read is that other districts are thinking, we're going to just have to chop salaries big time in order to survive next year, and I hope that's not the only answer, of course. But
Jay, I think that you're absolutely correct. How can you negotiate right now without knowing how much you can pay?
Right.
And unfortunately, that's a situation where the school board finds ourselves in. We would like nothing better than a contract. My wife is a teacher. She's been a teacher for 30-some years in the Dearborn school system. My daughter-in-law is a teacher. She works at Salina. You know, I've got grandkids in the school system. I want a contract. I want something so that the teachers know what they're getting and can plan. But the school board can't plan.
Right.
I mean, the school board has no idea as to what types of money we're going to get next year. Right. In fact, George Drainey was at the PTA meeting last night. There was a all the schools in Dearborn had a big PTA Founders Day lunch dinner. And
big time for celebration.
George said, I know George said in the 30 minutes or so from the time that he sat down until the presentation started, he had received 40 emails from community members telling him not to vote for this thing. And so, you know, it isn't a done deal right now.
No, it has to be. It has to go through the legislature as bills. They're going to negotiate in committees. They're going to
absolutely
argue on the floor of the Senate and the House.
But, so we can't panic.
But theoretically,
even though we are
theoretically, Governor Snyder's a Republican. The Republicans have a majority of seats in the House and the Senate in Lansing. They should be able to pass it slam dunk, with minor tweaking. And I think one of their rationales is, well, everybody winds up being hurt. So, let's not hear individual complaints. Well, I think we have to make an individual complaint, as I'm sure you and the board and your lobbyist and Drainey will, about the unfairness, not just to Dearborn, but, the state of Michigan. Education should be the core. I thought Governor Granholm said that. I thought even Snyder said that education is the core to our future, but I don't know if he means a future in 50 or 100 years or next year. You know, do we have to go through 3-4 years of bad education for our kids and for our people that need to be retrained in 21st century jobs? I think that's a real terrible mistake. Even business, though, who got a somewhat clearer rate of a business tax of 6%, rather than the kind of difficult to compute situation they had before, they lost some tax incentives that they can't deduct. Now, rest of us are losing some tax incentives too. The homeowners' deduction is being eliminated or proposed to be eliminated. People on pensions, like myself, and we're going to have to start paying the state income tax on that money, which we didn't have to do before. Well, in my case, it's several thousand dollars more each year from my pension, and I didn't expect that. I wonder about
4.25%.
Yeah, I didn't. In my crazy wanderings about how to solve the problems of the world, my brain does this automatically somehow. I just wonder, can't we all do with retirement money from the federal government? Shouldn't we all just have a pension that way? No one can live above the poverty level on federal retirement money, Social Security. I mean, it's just not possible. You'd have to go to a foreign country and, some third world country. So you have to have a pension from some other source, or savings or investments or something. You cannot live on Social Security. more than humble. I think you'd be on the edge of homeless if you had to live on Social Security. But all this money going into all these different state funds and different investment, you know, why don't we just, I'm basically a libertarian and I'm not in favor of big government because they can mess things up with all the bureaucracy. But there are some things, and I've said it on the show, and some people will obviously disagree, but there are some things that big government does really well and more efficiently, like in other big countries. Well, that's Medicare and health insurance. Even Mayor O'Reilly has spoken several times about he wished the state would maybe have a plan for public employee health insurance. It would save everybody money. And keep the costs down. Now, that's the important thing, because the Obamacare plan now that's been passed guarantees more coverage for people and takes away some of the problems of coverage if you get sick and so on. But it won't reduce the cost of health care for anybody, and they're going to keep going higher and higher. So there are some things. I just wonder about their retirement pension question. Nobody's ever come up with it. So remember, it started here first, folks. But, So everything is on the table then in terms of the contract negotiations. You're going to have to wait until the state budget is together to find out really what your plan of action is, because you don't have any numbers right now. You don't know what they're going to pass and sign into law.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know how much you can spend, you can't spend it, can you?
Yeah. Now, that deadline, Snyder's proposing, we want all these budget decisions finalized by May 31st. Well, that hasn't happened, I don't think, ever in the history of Michigan. But George DeRaney and one of his colleagues in the House put a bill out there, not that anybody's going to approve it, that would dock their pays. This is in local Dearborn papers this week. Dock their pay if they don't get a budget by July 1st. I think it's July 1st, but that's the official deadline anyway, because the next year starts July 1st. In terms of a fiscal year. So,
One thing that Snyder has done that I really applaud him for is he's trying to adopt a two-year budget. And that does give the school district a little leeway as far as planning is concerned. But if you can only plan year to year, it's so difficult, Jay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you have no idea as to how much money you're going to get, how much money you can spend, or the like. And each money that we spend for teacher salary, to some extent, we take out of the classroom, and we have to reduce the number of teachers.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, one of the things that the school board wants to do is keep class sizes smaller,
mm-hmm.
and we've got a finite amount of money, and if the teachers are given that money, then unfortunately we lay off. And that's what we did before. We had to lay off 60 teachers to keep going.
And it may be that deal with the devil the teachers may have to look at. If the cuts hold up, do they want to take major reductions in pay, or do they want to lose a large percentage of their colleagues and have more people?
That is really the question. And
what
oftentimes, Jay,
terrible situation.
You feel sympathetic towards the teachers also, because they may not have leeway as far as mortgages, mm-hmm. as far as car payments and the like, to take huge reductions. And so, by taking a huge reduction, you could be putting some people into bankruptcy, or very close to bankruptcy, because some of the teachers are earning $40,000 a year, and every single cent that they earn is already spent, and so it is a problem without real easy answers.
I looked through the PDF file of the governor's speech, and it's about 40 pages, so it's not the detail that perhaps you or Mr. Cipriano, is he the finance director for the Dearborn Public Schools?
Yes.
Right.
He is Marge Swan of the Dearborn Public Schools.
Right. Marge Swan is our controller here, yes. Okay. But it seemed to me that two-year budget, which I think is a great idea, maybe even a three- or five-year budget, but it's hard to plan that far in advance right now, but Governor Snyder's supposedly will not cut more from the school budget in the second year. The big
that
cut
is
the first year, but he's not proposing right now that he's going to cut any more. Again, they're assuming they can hold hold even, hit the bottom or whatever, and then maybe start coming back up somehow. But so I think that gives you a little bit of planning, that maybe what you have to do for fall is what you have to continue for the next year or two, which gives you some kind of stability there. But because having to reshuffle this very complicated financial deck every year, and usually at the last minute, you sometimes even into the fiscal year, you got to spend money to start the schools, and then you're told you don't have that, or they're going to cut off funds when you already made commitments. I mean, that just, it's terrible situation, and terrible way to run education in the state of Michigan. I've said that for years, but I don't know if the legislature can smooth things out at all, but I think education needs to come first, and business, you know, really, it needs to be straightened out. Things you can do, but it's I don't know. I don't know if the job incentives are going to be there, since it's just like Obama asked a group representing national business concerns last week at the White House. Could you please, like, hire more people?
Right.
He didn't say you must. Of course, he's not a dictator, thank goodness. But their response was, one of them stood up afterwards and said, you know, we're running a business here. That's it. There was the response of all the major business organizations, the lobbyist groups in the country is, he might ask us to hire more people, but if we don't have that profit margin, and we're making, and let's be straight here, that businesses across the country, they had, with some exceptions, the best year in the last 10 years last year. I mean, fantastic profits, and we're talking everybody big to small, and you know the GM and Chrysler and Ford are bounced back really big, and Ford was already on the track, all of the financial institutions on Wall Street and across the country, the big banks, best year ever. Have they raised the interest rates to us? And, you know, Jim, you don't have to comment. It's just my editorializing, which they let me do.
Rhetorical questions.
As long as you those are rhetorical questions. Amen.
Where is the these profits, will they eventually trickle down to more jobs or higher pay for anybody other than bonuses for the Wall Street people? I mean, I certainly hope so. But, you know, even the first George Bush disagreed in a debate with Ronald Reagan when they were both running for presidential nomination. He disagreed with voodoo economics. Voodoo economics is that trickle down stuff. It doesn't trickle down that much. You know, it just doesn't.
It trickles up.
Yeah. You know, well, that's what it kind of looks like. A lot of seniors in Dearborn are going to be hurting about their pensions and extra money they have to pay and losing the homeowner deduction and other deductions in there. I don't know if they're going to feel better about it knowing that business taxes are evened out and a little bit lowered. It'll be very interesting to follow this. Now, out of crisis comes opportunity. There's no doubt. If we all stay sane and sober and try to rethink the problems, of course, we have to deal with the politics, of course, too. But there's bound to be a good answer here. And I know that you, Jim, schoolmaster, are going to fight for the best education we can get. That's your job. That's so important.
It's our job and it's our passion, Jay.
Right, it has to be because they're not paying you much to be a school board member either.
So. No.
Do you get a pension plan? No, I don't know.
No, we get no pension plan.
There you go. See?
But, we're trying to run a business, and for example, we've got 12 buses that need to be retired. They're 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And we've got a rotation. The question is whether we should purchase buses to the tune of $100,000 per new bus, or whether we should limp along on the old buses that may cost us more in the long run to limp along with. You know, if you keep on putting off maintenance, and sooner or later, you're going to pay double. And so, you know, you have to look at different things. Like, we're concerned about maintenance in our schools. Mm-hmm. We've got great schools, but they're old.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so they have to be maintained. Buses, you know, we've got to continue to make investments, or else if we don't, all of a sudden things are going to crash around us.
And we actually in Dearborn have at least stable or actually increasing population in the schools?
Yes, we have.
It's a little bit of an increase each
yes,
year for the last couple of years. So we have that accommodation problem. We can't really close any schools to save money.
Absolutely
that's
not.
That's not an option. And we still have, I think the question, and there was a bad-smelling school. Was it an elementary school a couple of years ago?
No, it was Bryant.
Bryant, yeah.
Yes.
And they and they redid the air conditioning and some of the ceilings. But the better answer would have been tear it all down and start up with a school that's, but you can't afford that, you know.
No, so probably junior highs are over $30 million right now. Mm. And high schools are probably $50 million to build.
Wow.
From new.
Now I have a question, and I remember, mm-hmm. I believe it was, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it Dearborn Heights that was very intensely exploring the opportunities to increase revenue as opposed to cutting cost? They looked at a number of ways to increase revenue. The one that stuck out in my mind the most, because I work, mm-hmm. newspaper industry is my background, so when they were talking about putting advertising out, appropriate, relevant ads on the buses and around the school, and that was a way to raise revenue, is that something, has Dearborn considered anything like
that? Amen. Yes, we have. We've considered that. You know, one of the things that we do right now is pay for play, which means that individuals have to pay.
I know. My kids went to Elsa Ford, and I completely understand.
Mm-hmm.
But to me that makes sense. Because
it does.
It was not an astronomical number. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't it about $60 per student for a sport? Does that sound right?
85 or whatever. But
A couple years ago, it was my son. Yeah.
It's more than sports, too. You know, it's to become a member of the chess club.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
choir.
And so everyone has to realize that pay for play is for a lot of different activities.
I have to jump in here and say, I saw in the paper that one parent was complaining that because their son or daughter or they couldn't afford that amount. Their son or daughter, I think it was a son, dropped out of school. Dropped out of school because he couldn't play sports.
That's the other end.
Didn't you hear that at the board level? And then
we
the board directed someone to do a study to see if we don't have sports, then how many people will drop out of school? If you continue the pay-to-play plan and certain people can't afford it, then it just seems that's
a crazy option.
It's
waived in situations in which the individuals are indigent or prove that they don't have enough money.
So this person didn't ask for the waiver?
Well, I think the problem in this case is the father did not want to give money to the child to pay for this, and then the child did not have money on his own.
Oh.
But once again, we are in the process of investigating this thing, and so I'm only guessing.
Right.
And I think that you can, if you watch the board meetings, expect a report in which Superintendent Wiston tells how many individuals are playing for free, are indigent, or whether that's waived or not, what type of programs we have.
Because these situations are different for each family. I mean,
amen.
We have just a few more minutes. I wanted another question, and this was brought to my attention by Jay, that Henry Ford Community College, I mean, we're in we could be seen as busting at the seams because of, non-traditional students like myself coming back to school, reinventing themselves.
Isn't that great?
To me, that's
the most wonderful thing.
Well, my wife and I were in that position. We came back.
My son graduated from Michigan State and is in the radiology program here.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. I mean, you know, so he's 35 years of age. My grandson goes to the Henry Ford preschool here. And so, you know, I'm a double Henry Ford person.
And that reinforces exactly what Jay said about Schneider's decision to leave the community college level alone. At the same time, is there the possibility that if it gets bad enough in the Dearborn Public Schools that they can come and take some money from Henry Ford? I mean, isn't that part of...
Actually, it's just the opposite of what they've been doing. The school aid fund was set aside as part of the sales tax fund, and because of the fact that the school aid fund is well-funded and Henry Ford is paid out of operations in the operating budget, they are taking money out of the school aid fund for Henry Ford and for the other colleges in the state of Michigan.
I see.
Yeah, they made a change in where they're getting the money for the
colleges. Because I remember at one point that seemed like that could be a concern. And I was just...
It is a terrible concern for the individuals at K-12
because
of the fact that they don't feel that they should be taking money, they should be robbing money from the school aid fund to pay to colleges and community colleges.
Interesting.
Gee, okay. I wish we could end on a happy note here.
We can. We can figure something out.
We can end on a lot of happy notes.
Thank you.
Well, I
think that we
just don't let Jay talk.
Okay. We're starting your new science building.
Yes. Oh, no, the college is doing well, and because we're responding to the needs of the people. About 80% of our budget comes from the tuition we charge, and we don't charge that much compared to the four-year schools.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. The city of Dearborn provides, I think, 15 to 17% of our budget, something like that, and the rest comes from miscellaneous state and federal monies, usually earmarked for one thing or the other. But so, in a way, we're really greatly supported just by user fees, just by the people who want the education.
Yes.
That's most of the money coming in here. We couldn't do without, of course, the portion from the Dearborn Public Schools and the other monies we find elsewhere. I actually saw on my list here of events to promote at the last minute is that the Dearborn Educational Foundation, they're the fundraising group for K-12, they're having Mardi Gras fundraising, folks, which cost a few bucks to go. Is it $20?
$20.
Yeah, not bad. It's going to be on March the 8th.
Mm-hmm.
3:30 to 9 p.m. at the golf course over here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And but they may consider raising their rates for that, or you might.
Well, it's $25 at the door, and so
they may be doing the Mardi Gras every night, you know, to save the schools here. So if you love that Mardi Gras cooking and partying, we may see more of that kind of stuff, and that would be a desperation move. But you know, what can you do? I do think you know that the people that have a lot of money ought to be taxed a little more, and I'm sorry about that, but in these difficult times, you know, like Social Security and so on, after you reach a certain amount, you don't pay any more money into Social Security for the federal government. Well, that kind of cutoff, I don't see how you can keep that going. I mean, I think
although
it has to be
not true for Medicare.
A fair contribution. We also have mentioned and recommended
to keep on paying.
To Rainey too, is that there are better ways than the income tax to raise money, and more secure and more stable. Jim, I don't know if you're aware of something called the Fair Tax Proposal. It's both a national proposal, and there's a Michigan Fair Tax Organization.
Sure.
They very simply will do away with the income taxes and go to a little bit more sales tax. Actually, they believe revenue neutral, same amount of money coming in, but more stable. It's been proven that, and I didn't know this until I saw the research, that people don't really stop buying very much. But in difficult economic times, you know, those property values, they just go down, you know, 30-40% or more. Mm-hmm. And so any sort of monies going in trying to be raised based on property taxes are very volatile.
That's correct.
And that's the school money, right, is based on property taxes.
Well, the school money is not based on... Actually, Henry Ford Community College money is based on property taxes.
Okay.
We lost $2.25 million last year based on Dearborn property taxes.
All right.
Because of the fact that their valuation for taxing purposes was $15 million.
Mm-hmm.
They reduced their valuation by about 15% because of the fact that they felt that taxable values had fallen.
Because the economy,
much.
Sure. Absolutely.
And so we received about $2.25 million less, but once again, theoretically, everything is sent to the state of Michigan, where it's resent back to the schools, and generally, the schools are funded based on the sales tax.
Well, you have a tough job ahead, and maybe you didn't think about this or didn't realize what was coming down the pike. Although I think everybody knows that the times are difficult economically, and they're not going to get better for a couple more years. We certainly hope they're going to be better soon.
Thank you, Jay.
So any way that we can help get the word out or continue the debate or get suggestions from people, like more Mardi Gras events or something, to help the Dearborn Public Schools, we certainly want to do that here. The most important thing is to get the word out and get the discussions going.
Amen.
And get the input, and then the people at the top, like yourself, Mr. Schoolmaster, you got the difficult job of straightening it out.
Thank you.
Along with Mr. Whiston, of course, yes. Our superintendent, and all of his staff.
I'd like to congratulate your culinary art program. Apparently, they're open now on both Wednesday night and Thursday nights, mm-hmm. And so for people that work and the like, please go to 5101.
That's awesome.
It's a great program, and there's good food every night. It's very reasonably priced.
It's a value, absolutely.
And it's a way that you can support the college also.
And you eat there, too. You were here last Wednesday, a couple days ago.
Yes, so. I was.
Yeah, see? So he's not just, making this up, folks. He's a direct experiencer in the community. And thanks so much for being on the Journal today, and we'll
thank
keep
you.
In touch.
Thank you.
Really appreciate that. Dennis, thank you for being sitting in with us today. We always thank the Dearborn Press and Guide and the News Herald for events. Remember the Mayor's State of the City address on cable TV locally next Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Or here on the Journal, you can hear the audio of that presentation next Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. Thank you for being with us. Highway 61 with Joanne Kay starts right now on WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
WHFR, Dearborn. Broadcasting, as always, from the campus of Henry.